from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, police visited Oakland's Ghost Ship warehouse repeatedly in the months and years leading up to the devastating December fire that killed 36 people. That's according to documents released by the city just yesterday. We'll find out what's in the records. And then at 9:30, as some Republican lawmakers are clamoring for Governor Brown to declare the state drought-free, the State Water Board has made a decision to extend emergency drought regulations through September. And with brimming reservoirs and a snowpack that is close to double the average for this time of the year, we'll find out why. Forum is next, after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Records released on Wednesday, that's yesterday, by the city of Oakland show the Ghost Ship warehouse in Oakland, the site of a deadly December fire that killed 36 people, had amassed dozens of code enforcement and police visits in the years before the blaze. Police visited the warehouse to investigate a rave back in March of 2015, and code complaints stretched back to 2004. The latest news comes as Oakland's fire chief, Teresa Deloach-Reed, is on family leave with no specific return date. Reed had been criticized for the department's failure to prevent the fire, and we're going to discuss the findings with KQED news editor and reporter Dan Brecke, who's here with us in studio. And Dan, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what did we learn from essentially what has been released? And I ought to mention that a lot of it's been redacted, and there's still probably a lot more to come, but we have learned a great deal, have we not?
Yeah, there are hundreds of pages of information here, and the way I would summarize it first is that it really puts flesh on the bones of earlier reports. A lot of people are focusing now on what these documents show about police activity at the address of the Ghost Ship in the years prior to the fire. We and others had reported on neighbors who said they had called the police in many times and complained about specific conditions at the warehouse, and the reports bear that out. Beyond that, the reports show incidents where police officers were called in to deal with violent situations, sometimes involving fights, sometimes involving guns, sometimes involving illegal raves, as you just mentioned.
I mentioned you before we went on the air because a lot of people were very angry when I said there might have even questioned the possibility of there being drugs there.
You know, it's part of a culture, and there's no blame that attaches to that, in my opinion. But the reports from the police show that officers were there frequently and observed illegal conditions and chose not to either cite the landlord, the person who was living there, Derek Elmina, or to refer the situation to other city agencies. The relevant one would be the Planning and Building Department. So, you know, that's where a lot of the attention is focused right now. There are also pretty detailed descriptions of the difficulties involved in fighting the fire. As we reported yesterday, one of the accounts in there is a short but very dramatic account from the fire captain who is stationed 100 yards away from the Ghost Ship, who said when they rolled up the truck bay door to go out to the call, within a minute, by the way, after it arrived, they could see smoke pouring from the building. So they knew they were up against it even before they got there. So I think what we're looking at, you know, as you sift through this stuff, planning records have been open to a certain extent. So we knew that there had been an extensive history of code enforcement complaints and violations found at the properties associated with the Ghost Ship. And to make the situation clear, I mean, we're talking about 31st Avenue in East Oakland in the Fruitvale neighborhood. And there were several buildings on the block, several properties on the block, including a couple of buildings owned by a single Oakland landlord. One of the properties is a vacant lot. There were lots of complaints over the years about garbage, trash, abandoned cars, people living illegally in the lot.
They went to the lot, but they ignored the warehouse.
Well, that's the situation in I mean, there are questions about that, but that's the specific situation that's raised by one very attention-getting complaint and visit that happened in November 2016, 3 weeks before the fire, where there was a complaint about the lot. It seemed to also involve a complaint about an illegal structure inside something. The only thing that was responded to was the situation in the lot, and the inspector clearly didn't understand that there might have been a complaint lodged against the building as well. So, you know, to set the situation, we have several of these properties, and there were complaints against all of them, including one that hasn't been talked about so much, which has housed an auto body shop and various businesses up at the corner of International Boulevard and 31st Avenue.
There were also 100 police calls, at least, and there was a salon owner who said the city inspector told her not to even complain because the building might be closed and jobs lost. I mean, some of this stuff is really damning. It's also and ought to be of deep concern to many in Oakland that there was lack of communication between the inspectors, the fire, and the police people.
Well, I think that's definitively shown here, that there was confusion both within agencies, especially planning and building and its predecessor agency, about what was being done. There are complaints where you see a history of, you know, perhaps 8 months, violations verified, but, inspections and actions always suspended or delayed. So confusion within agencies, and then a lack of communication across agencies. Now, if you talk to Oakland officials now, they will say, we're getting our act together, we're going to do better. But at the same time, as we've both heard, both Mayor Libby Schaaf and the head of the police officers union are pushing back and saying, well, it's not the police officer's job to be a code enforcement officer. I think the rejoinder to that that's already out there is, well, don't be a code enforcement officer, but tell a code enforcement officer what the heck is going on.
And the Oakland Fire Chief, Teresa Deloach Reed, is on a leave of absence the day before the records are released. One has to ask why it took 3 months for those records to be released. I'll pose that question to you. But what is the status of her job here? I mean, reportedly, she went into a rant up in the Oakland Hills when there was a fire protection meeting, telling that she threatening to sue for defamation. I mean, this has gotten a little bit crazy.
Well, listen, something like this happens, somebody, you know, multiple people are going to be held responsible. She's at the top of the fire department. And there are a series of issues attached to her administration, going, you know, back to a grand jury report that found deficiencies in the fire safety inspection program. You know, the East Bay Times broke a story yesterday on problems with the vegetation management, you know, fire safety program in the hills. So there are lots of questions, and I think this just sort of pushes things to a breaking point. Now, we don't know that the chief is absent for anything other than a family emergency or family situation. So, you know, you really can't, or I can't really comment on that.
She said she's tending to a sick relative.
Exactly. And we don't know any different. But yes, the fire department, I would say, is in a state of crisis.
And what would you say about the fact that it took 3 months to release these reports?
Well, it was a couple months. And I think Mayor Schaaf made a statement yesterday that, you know, the city believes that sunshine, you know, on all the facts is
she's
required.
Used the word transparency frequently.
Yeah, I don't think this has been a very transparent process. They got pushed very hard by news agencies. Again, you know, the strongest push coming from the East Bay Times, but lots of other news organizations, including ours, and not all the requests have been met. You know, there's one specifically I can mention that we would like to get all the fire inspection records for the last several years. That request has been in for a while, and it's been ignored so far. So this release, this discovery of information is not over. It's probably just beginning.
We've got a half-hour segment here with KQED editor and reporter for KQED News, Dan Brecke, and this is in light of new released information records that show inspectors visited Ghost Ship Warehouse dozens of times. And I'd like to hear from you, and if you have questions or comments, you can join us now. Let me tell you how. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Please feel free to voice your concerns and any questions or comments you might have by calling us. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post whatever your questions or comments might be there, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Cause of the fire is still not determined, although there's been a good deal of reasoning and deductions that's probably the electrical system.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything different.
And what's the effect of these records being released on lawsuits, which are piling up?
Well, you know, there's a long process of discovery involved in the lawsuits, and the lawyers representing families of victims are going to have more leverage than the media has had so far to get into the city information. So I don't think that what we've seen here is going to affect the lawsuits. That's speculation. I mean, we don't really know. One thing I can say for sure, though, what's been released isn't going to help the city's cause.
And as I understand it, citations were issued after the charred bodies were removed?
Yeah, well, they in the aftermath, it was clear that there were a raft of violations, and the city cited them.
We're going to go to our calls here, and let me go first to some listener comments. Listener writes, please don't blame the police or fire department for this really sad incident. Blame the extreme housing crisis across the Bay Area. Another listener says, if you open the hood on any city department, there's mass dysfunction and failure. There is a pact between elected officials, labor, and department leaders to look the other way. There is simply no will to address what is widespread dysfunction in the city of Oakland. We should not be shocked. And a question from Russ, who wants to know, did Mayor Schaaf not know about all this stuff, or was she covering it up? It's got to be one or the other, right?
Well, I'm not clear on when Russ is speaking about since the fire or before the fire. Listen, there have been anecdotal accounts, for instance, from Noel Gallo, who is the council person representing the Fruitvale District, that he and friends of his who patrol the neighborhood regularly knew that there was a problem there. It was mostly blight. There's a lot of trash around. I don't think it's been definitively shown that the city knew there was a crisis about to happen or a tragedy about to happen at this location. And that's one thing that I think is very striking here. If you look at the Oakland Police Department incident reports, for instance, and they have an Excel spreadsheet you can access to see what's happened in the previous 90 days, and it gives you a snapshot, you'll see that there are lots of places in Oakland that are hot spots of activity. If you look at the planning and building records, there are lots of places that are hot spots where there are repeat violations, where there are violations that are not closed. And I think the thing to remember is that until 11/23 on December 2nd, 2016, 3115 31st Avenue was just another building in Oakland. Nobody knew this was going to happen. And this isn't to say that some kind of tragedy is in the offing there, but there are other situations that are crying out for attention in the city. That's for sure.
Well, the thing that stands out, and I'm going to go to our callers here, is that police were called repeatedly over reports, as you alluded to before, Dan, of theft and fights and threats and guns and rave party, and somebody barricaded within. No arrests, no citations, even though it wasn't licensed as a nightclub, and no follow-up, even though it was illegally being used as a home as well, on top of all that. Now, there may be other situations that parallel it, but let's go to our callers. Let me begin with Jordan in Oakland. Jordan, you're on.
Hey, I think that there's a larger issue that's going on here around housing in Oakland. I used to live in a warehouse named Lobot in West Oakland where we threw unpermitted parties and stuff like that. And the city is not really doing a lot right now. It's not really doing anything to address the affordable housing crisis in the Bay Area. So people are finding themselves living in sketchy situations, and part of living your life is celebrating and having a good time with your friends. And so then people are doing these things in less than safe spaces.
Jordan, you make an excellent and I think salient point. I mean, when we've covered this, certainly came up about the housing crisis and gentrification. In fact, I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Robert who says, whatever legitimate concerns are discussed with the city's actions leading up to the Ghost Ship fire, we must take care that the results don't contribute to the escalating gentrification of Oakland. We don't want a city where only rich people can live. And that's been a heralded cry here, Dan. Yeah.
Well, it has been. And I would say that that issue has gotten a lot of attention since the fire. I mean, there have been multiple city meetings where I think the community has been heard loud and clear on this very point. And Mayor Schaaf and the members of the city council seem to be committed to making sure that, especially in the artist community, which the city says it values very highly, that there isn't some kind of draconian across-the-board action that makes living in the city more difficult. What I don't think has been said as clearly, though, is that the city, this problem of illegal residences is much wider than artist residences or warehouses. There are places all across the city, especially in East Oakland, to a lesser extent in West Oakland, where normal, regular size residential units have been subdivided, and no permits, clearly illegal residences, and the city is up against it trying to keep up with that problem. So people are living in some substandard conditions across the city.
And we bring in more of your calls. Let me go next to another Oakland caller. Adriel, you're on the air. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning. I'm a longtime listener of NPR, and I'm really glad that you guys are doing this story and segment because it really hits home. I'm actually in one of those warehouses, and our landlord actually had us sign false leases. And we actually are the first warehouse to be displaced. And I just was questioning if you guys have looked into any of the ordinances or the things that the city is, in fact, now doing for warehouses like myself, because we now have 21 residents displaced and the city has shut down our power. Landlord's not really doing anything. So just, I don't know. I'm interested to see what you guys know about the ordinances and, yeah.
Well, thank you for the question. Let's go to Dan Brickey.
The city council is supposed to hold they've been using the last couple of months as a study period to come up with proposals for dealing with these, quote unquote, illegal housing situations or unpermitted housing. It's true that several landlords, and they're pretty high profile cases, really panicked immediately after the fire and, told residents they'd have to leave. And the city has, is sort of caught in the middle on this. If a landlord says leave, I don't think the city has much power to say, no, let them stay. Although there have been moves, I think, on the part of council member Rebecca Kaplan and others to try to declare a moratorium on that kind of eviction while the city tries to figure out what to do. As far as this particular situation the caller is talking about, we'd sure like to hear the specifics if we can figure out a way of contacting you.
We're getting a lot of questions and responses to listeners wanting to know about the owner. Shannon asks, lots of attention paid to the guy who was renting it, but why no accountability on the property owner? And Laura says, how is it that inspectors are not able to inspect the inside of the property without the owner's permission? Isn't that part of the problem here? Let's talk about Chor Ng, who is the owner of this property, and how does she figure into this whole equation, particularly after the release of these records?
Well, she's not getting off scot-free. She is being sued. She owns several other properties in other parts of the city, especially Chinatown. And I would say that she bears very serious exposure to liability in this case. It's clear when you look at just the documents released yesterday for the other buildings that she owns on the same block that there were continual problems there. So, like I said, she's not getting off scot-free. There's also a question of criminal liability, and the Alameda County District Attorney is still weighing the case. And I think the person who is believed to have the most serious potential criminal liability is Derek Elmina, who is the master tenant in the warehouse.
Who a woman said actually threatened her. I mean, that all came out in this as well. And getting back to the owner, I'm looking at a comment from Tammy who says, ownership belongs ultimately to the owner. I'm a fire alarm inspector for a security company. I write up systems constantly. We refer to code and report to authorities. If a building owner takes the money, the owner needs to be held accountable.
And I believe just from a little experience looking at the kind of lawsuits we're looking at that she is going to be held liable.
Well, you mentioned Derek Elmina, and here's a caller, Chris, who wants to address his role in this. Chris, go ahead.
Hi. Well, the speaker just kind of made some of my points, but I think that the primary responsibility has to be with the tenant. He can make it difficult for the owner to look at the property, but I do think the owner is also responsible. And, you know, it's similar to the whole thing with sanctuary cities and stuff. If you want people to call the police about things or call the fire department about other things and they have to worry about being evicted out of their illegal housing, then you're going to reduce the number of people that are going to call. And so I don't think you could put this on the cops and the firemen. I think you need to put this on the owner and the tenant.
All right. I thank you, Chris, for weighing in here. And here's Connie who writes, I built a house in Oakland back in 2000. Oakland departments were the worst I ever encountered. The laziness and lack of care were rampant. And we go to another Oakland caller. Simon, that's you. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I think your last caller nailed it there with the analogy for sanctuary cities. I think there needs to be some outreach that happens between the building department and tenants. I think there's probably an analog with community policing, what is the city doing to reach out to people who live in these housing situations and develop a relationship with them?
You know, that's a very interesting question. And, you know, I talked to a former senior Oakland City official not too long ago. And, you know, one of the questions that comes up is how does this whole process work, the complaint process? Well, or the inspection process for code enforcement especially. It's all complaint driven. And this official made the point that before the housing collapse and the budget crisis in Oakland, he had envisioned trying to transition to a more proactive stance where inspectors would be out in the community, maybe making the kind of contacts you're talking about. But the way the system works now is, and if you go through the planning and building database, it's clear that most of the time what's happening is neighbors are ratting each other out. And that's kind of the way it works.
Let me read one final comment from a listener. It says, so many people want to blame this on the high cost of housing. There is a Bay Area housing crisis, but that has to do with the cost of construction and the long permit process for construction. All that said, we can't neglect the responsibility of property owners to maintain safe structures. This owner should be made an example of and jailed. Suing her isn't sufficient. She should be charged with voluntary and involuntary manslaughter. There you have it. Strong opinions, obviously, will continue to be the case, especially as we get more information and more is released. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Dan Brecke is editor and reporter for KQED News. When we return, we're going to find out what actually has happened with state water extending conservation rules. You'd think the drought was over, but nope. More of that when we return. I'm Michael Krasny.